From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of July 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the International Grains Council has raised its world corn estimate by 15 million metric tons. USDA says it will resurvey four states for crop acreage, and Chinese manufacturing has fallen off pace. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll tell you how farmers may have to deal with the building population of herbicide-resistant weeds in the state. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Futures finished like this. The July futures for the soft red winter wheat were down a quarter of a cent today. Settlement price at 584.5, September at 612.25, 2 cents lower. And next year's July up 10.75 cents at $7.37.75 at the CME Group in Chicago. July corn futures today at $6.40.75 settlement price, up 11.75. September futures were down sharply, down 41.25 at $6.06.75. December at $5.96.75, 23.75 cents lower. And the March contract at $6.10.75, down 22 on the day. Next year's July, 19.5 lower at $6.26.5, and December at $5.89.5, up 2.5 cents for 2012 December harvest month. July soybeans at $13.22.25, up 16 cents today. August at $13.12.75, up 13 and a quarter. September, $13.09.5 a bushel, up 14. And November beans, $13.12.5, 18 and a half higher. January up 18 and a half as well at $13.22.75. August 2012 at $13.29.75, up 20.75 cents. Bean meal at $3.40.90, up 8.70. July bean oil at $55.16, 12 higher. CME Group live cattle finished the August at $112.85. Up $1.97.5. August feeders at $140.47.5, up $2.40. September there at $141.55, up $2.62.5. And July lean hogs on the day at $95.50, up $1.10 for 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the August at $94.87 a barrel, down 55 cents. Ethanol at $2.67, up 5.2 cents. And natural gas at $4.32 1/10 cents, down 5.3 cents. August heating oil or diesel fuel, $2.92 4 cents, down 2.1 cents. And the gold futures at $1,482.30 an ounce, down $20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 583, up about 170 points, and the dollar at 74.35, up 0.05. The CRB Index at 336.89 is down 1.16 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies. A high near 92 degrees. The heat index as high as 101. South-southwest winds between 10 and 13. They'll gust all the way to 18 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 72. Southwest winds at 6 to 9. Saturday, a 30% chance of showers. A few thunderstorms in the area. Mostly sunny then. A high of 93. Heat index tomorrow at 102. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Partly cloudy, a low of 71 degrees. And Sunday, mostly sunny. A high of 86. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 67 on July 4th, Independence Day. Monday, mostly sunny skies and a beautiful high near 85 degrees. Monday night, partly cloudy, a low of 66. Tuesday, sunny and 87. Tuesday night, cloudy and 69. Wednesday, sunny and 87. Wednesday night, cloudy and 67. And on Thursday of next week, sunny skies, a high near 84 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzulow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, is on the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets today. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Are you recovering yet?
Oh, golly. You know, I was looking at the monthly, quarterly, and yearly charts on the net prices, and we had been down, we're down about 26% year-to-date on lead month wheat. 25% of that was in the month of June, and so it was just a train wreck in the month of June. So, no, the answer to your question is no, I'm not recovering yet.
Hey, you got those same kind of numbers for corn and beans?
Yeah, the corn was month-to-date was down, let's see, front-end corn was down 15.9%. Year-to-date is identical to where we closed on 12/31/2010. For beans, month-to-date, we were down 5.1%. Year-to-date, down 6.3%. So you can see how the wheat has pulled the corn down, and to a lesser degree, the beans. But it looks like the USDA report's going to try and change those bean numbers and those corn numbers around in the short term anyway.
Indeed. So I was looking at the weekly trades, and if you want to feel better about the USDA report from yesterday and you were hoping for higher prices in the marketplace, I don't know that you'll get higher prices out of this after the report, but the weekly change is not nearly as bad as what you might have envisioned. For instance, July corn was down, what, 71 cents yesterday? But for the week, it's down half that. Less than half of that, 29 and a quarter. December corn down 35 and a quarter from last Friday's close. Has the trade begun to come to, I don't know whether they're settled about this yet, but come in and thought a little bit more about those numbers and be more comfortable with them as a trading floor?
I think that they were able to trade more the bean number today, and that seemed to be very, very obvious. To answer your bigger picture question, I guess I'm of the mindset that because it was a holiday weekend and because the trading was on expanded limits, I don't think the confidence is there at all right now to come back in the beginning of next week and jump on it and buy into it. I would say, though, that the July Dease corn spread acted very, very well with all this export business that was confirmed before the opening to unknown destinations. And then I later found out that there was more rumors of China buying in the late part of the day. So right after I got off the phone with doing the midday update with you folks, I got an update from Chicago saying that there might have been some more business scheduled and put in the hopper with China. Don't know if it was both old crop or new crop. That may play out next week, Todd, but I think it'll probably be like this past week, and today in particular, you saw the spread react really, really favorable to that, but the flat price didn't, and it goes right back to the wheat and the fact that the corn and the wheat kind of felt each other's pain and really couldn't get hopping. So again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I really think it's extremely important now, especially with USDA's numbers out. We got to have a bottom in the wheat until before we can look for one in the corn.
You want to pick one? Where should it be?
Well, if last year and in 2008 is any indication, we still have a gap on the daily July chart at 552 in July wheat, and I think we'll fill that before July goes off the board. So I'm going to, and this kind of goes in line with what Dave and I were talking about this morning. I think between the bean report and that gap being filled before the July goes off the board in wheat, that the wheat and the beans become more of a supportive factor to the corn by the time we get to the middle of the month. So I'm going to say right after or right before the USDA supply-demand report, we'll have that bottom in place in the wheat.
Were you happy yesterday with the 75.2 million acres that USDA released for soybeans?
I was, from a standpoint that I no longer have to worry about the beans being a weight to the potential corn upside, and that's one of the major reasons why I'm not going to sit here and say that I think a major top is in place in corn like a lot of people have said since the USDA put their numbers out. I actually think the exact opposite. I think that you have the factors in place, the supply-demand factors in place for a major low to be brewing in the corn, maybe even a pre-harvest low. The biggest thing I continue to worry about and looking past the weekend and when I come back will be this debt issue that we got to talk about in the United States and up on Capitol Hill. That's where it goes back to the wheat and the corn and the grains, the agriculture commodities, along with the metals and energies. Do the funds continue to lessen their extent of length in those because they're worried about the risk-taking due to what's going on Capitol Hill. And that's where the stock market and the commodities are probably going to have to come together again next week.
Have you calculated a carryout for next year for corn?
Yeah. For corn, we essentially, I'm looking at maybe going from 695 in the June report to 967 to a billion bushels, depending on how you feel about the grain stocks report. For the beans, you've gone from a 190 to about a 130, depending on how you look at the grain stocks report.
So you're up, what, about 250 million? Bushels.
Yeah, I would say rounding it, 300 million increase in the corn ending stocks number. Yeah, and I think that's where it goes back to, like last year, I think the USDA's really roped themselves into a situation where they're not going to be able to get high harvested acres and high yield at this point because of what's happened already in this growing season. So the June 9th report of 13.2 billion bushels, that production number, that's really what I'm going to focus on. I don't think we can get too much above that. And we might be able to even slip but down closer to a 13 billion bushel number. So I think that's what I need to keep my eye on for the rest of the season.
And what yield were you using?
That was a 158.5 yield, so I was pretty much right in line with
USDA. Yeah, so they're at 158.7, which is the number they have to use because that came from WASDE and the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate Reports, or the Ag Outlook Board on the previous one.
Yeah, so in essence, you're either going to go below 84 million acres or you're going to go down to a 155 yield is what I'm guessing at this point.
Not going to go up?
I don't think so, Todd. I think that at this point, because of what they did with the acres, there's too many holes, too many ponds, too many issues out there in the eastern Corn Belt and the central Corn Belt. The other big thing that goes back to harvested acres is that 578 data, the certified acres. That's just not in the market yet. It's not in the USDA numbers yet, nor is the Northern Plains, nor is Ohio. So I think there's just too much information out there that's important that is not going to allow me to change both acres and yield in favor of bigger production.
And what are you making recommendations to farmers to do?
A 20% hedge was recommended for wintertime HTAs. In other words, sell the March at the 610 level, leave your basis open, looking to buy back on the calls next week. We'll be looking at the crop insurance to help us on the way down in terms of adding to our selling price. We'll be looking to the calls and the basis to add to our selling price if the market rebounds and rallies in the next 3 weeks.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Happy holiday to you.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Be sure to stay with us if you can on our website at Will Ag for our weekend program. That's called Commodity Week. We'll record it at 4:30 this afternoon, post it to WILLAG.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest will include Don Rose with U.S. Commodities out of West Des Moines, Iowa. And I talked with Joe Persaki about an hour ago, and he said he'd be on the program, so we're going to have him drop in with us for just a bit. It'll be 5:30 his time. He'll be off for the weekend and the holiday, but he thinks maybe he ought to have a discussion with us. So Joe Persaki of USDA NAS here, Don Rose, all in Commodity Week. Dave Dickey will be here in a second, too, on this program to bring you up to date on all the agricultural news for the day.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, a landmark free trade agreement between South Korea and the European Union took effect today amid expectations of a boost to already booming commerce between the two sides. It is the first such accord for the EU with an Asian country. It immediately slashes 70% of tariffs, with that set to expand to 98.7% within 5 years. The International Grains Council yesterday raised its estimate for world corn production by 15 million metric tons, only hours after USDA stunned markets with its own estimates. The IGC now expects farmers to produce 858 million tons of the grain, up from its previous estimate of 843 million tons, and 33 million tons higher than compared with last year due to improving hopes for crops in the U.S. and China. USDA will resurvey how much corn, soybeans, and spring wheat is being grown in four states that suffered planting delays. NASS already surveyed planting in Montana, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota in June, but because of delays there due to rain and flooding, the agency wants a better assessment. The new survey will be conducted this month. Chinese manufacturing slipped to its slowest pace in 28 months in June. The China Federation of Logistics and Purchasing says in its monthly Purchasing Managers Index that it is now 50.9 in June from 52 in May, 52.9 in April, and 53.4 in March. But the index has remained above 50. That's the benchmark for expansion for 26 straight months. The report says the trend likely augurs a further slowdown in growth, though, brought on by inflation-fighting curbs on credit. China's government purchased as many as 1.6 million metric tons of new crop U.S. corn before Thursday's report. Sinograin, which manages the state grain stocks, purchased cargoes earlier this week. A senior industry analyst says that Beijing has set aside funds to buy between 9 million and 10 million metric tons overseas to refill state reserves. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will record at 4:30 Central Time this afternoon and post it to our website by about 6 o'clock this evening. You can get it there as a podcast or just listen to it right from the website at WILLAG.org. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural commodities. Should be a really good show given USDA's reports yesterday morning. Don Rose of U.S. Commodities from West Des Moines, Iowa will be our guest. Now up next, a discouraging number of water hemp plants have survived applications of post-emergence herbicides throughout the state of Illinois. I'll have more on the reasons why and what farmers can do. During the last 10 days of June, University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager says farmers called him more often than ever before about the number of plants surviving glyphosate applications in soybean.
Very common scenario would be where we have plants that were effectively controlled, completely killed, right next to plants that are very healthy and seemingly unaffected. So, unfortunately, we're very concerned that the resistance evolution is continuing and perhaps even increasing and becoming much, much more common here in the central and north central part of Illinois.
Hager says in some cases the cause of plant survival could be attributable to an application rate too low for the size of the plant present, precipitation that occurred soon after the application, or poor coverage of the target vegetation. In other instances, the best explanation appears to be the evolution of a glyphosate-resistant population, meaning the weed, water hemp, has adapted. It has become resistant to the herbicide used more often than not to control it, glyphosate. There is no easy fix for this problem.
Well, the options for controlling resistant water hemp really depend, unfortunately, on the type of resistance that we have. Now, if we simply have applied glyphosate and it's been very ineffective, we have a history of using glyphosate on that field. It's not a question that we use the inappropriate rate. Let's assume that it is actually glyphosate resistant. The options then for farmers would be simply to try to retreat, if necessary, with one of the PPO inhibitors, things that contain the active ingredients, for example, of fomesafen or Flexstar, lactoferrin, sold as Cobra, for example. these would be really the only other post-emergence options in conventional soybean or glyphosate-resistant soybean varieties that a farmer could select.
The viable herbicide options for control of surviving water hemp depend on the resistance profile of the plants. Hager reminds growers that it is possible that more than one type of herbicide resistance is present in any given field. For example, surveys from 2010 indicated approximately 33% of glyphosate-resistant water hemp populations also demonstrated resistance to PPO inhibitors, and virtually all populations were also resistant to ALS inhibitors.
If that is the case, and that is the scenario, we have no chemical options for the control of those multiple resistant plants.
And it is back to the wheat hook and the hoe. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us today is Bruce Bostert. He's at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Bruce, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, good to be here.
Well, I had a question, and I bet you got this question a couple of times. You know, we talked earlier in the week, and you said I had that half a bin of corn. You were going to sell it. I was going to sell it to you. Is that still good?
No.
I didn't think so. Oh, it's been a rough week. How did it happen where you were? What was the big problems?
On the rough week?
Yeah.
So, probably a dollar in a day and a half will do it on the corn bid.
Yeah, that's a long
That'll
way down.
That'll grab your attention.
I bet that got a lot of your producers' attentions. Did they ask you at all about soybeans?
Not a whole lot. I tell you, I had one decent bean delivery day this week, which kind of surprised me. A week ago, I would have told you there wasn't a soybean left in the country.
But they found some, huh?
They found some, which always happens. We just cleaned a bin out. So as soon as you get a clean out, then you can find a few.
Oh. That makes the workers happy.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so where do we go from here, and what fundamentally changed for you, or maybe didn't, as you look now at the landscape for the corn crop that's in the ground?
I would say nothing fundamentally changed for me, because the important thing to me is what's actually out there, not what in my local area, not what the USDA says is out there. The deferred basis levels didn't really change all that much. I think the key on here is we've got a lot of things that we can trade off of in the next 60 days. They're going to resurvey how many acres are out in the, out in the northwest part of the belt, so that'll be there. We're going to take a look at two different departments in the USDA and a difference of opinion on what was planted. So we'll get in there, and now we get to trade the weather for, July. Mm-hmm. That's not particularly a change from any other year.
All right, and then and basis is off sharply. Is basis off sharply now?
Basis is back a little bit on the old crop. It lost some ground when we switched over from the July to the Sep in corn and to the August in soybeans. So we lost some ground. I think one key thing to look at is we had a couple sales announcements overnight. So China bought some corn, and unknown, which everybody is assuming is also China, bought some corn, both scattered old and new. So we'll see if we're in here buying back a little bit of the demand that we had rationed.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That is Bruce Bostert. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
It's National Ginger Snap Day. The cookie likely dates back to medieval times. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, Edward Jenner of Berkeley, England, conducted his first experiment with smallpox inoculation, showing that the cowpox virus provides immunity to smallpox. By the way, cowpox gets its name from cow maids touching the udders of infected cows. In 1860, Charles Goodyear died. He invented the process named vulcanization, which made the commercial use of rubber possible. Vulcanized rubber did not become brittle in winter, nor turn gummy in summer as natural rubber did, but Goodyear never profited by his invention. In 1901, the U.S. National Bureau of Standards was created. Its duties included testing and calibration of measuring scales. In 1910, Ward Baking Company of Chicago, Illinois, opened the first completely automated bread plant in the U.S. The dough and bread remained untouched by human hands until it exited the machine already wrapped. And in 1953, Cheese Whiz was introduced nationwide by Kraft. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather in Chicago now joins us to take a look at the weekend forecast and what might be popping on the 4th of July for Monday. Mike, thanks so much. What do you see for the holiday weekend?
Well, the holiday weekend will be kind of a mixed bag of weather. We have a pretty significant round of heat that's underway in the plains and into the western and central Corn Belt, and that continues to move eastward through Friday and then into Saturday a little bit. But what ends up happening is we end up dividing the Corn Belt with hot weather in southern areas and cool weather in northern growing areas. And by northern growing areas, we're talking way up there in Minnesota. So most areas will end up being near to slightly warmer than usual through the weekend. The real tricky part is identifying where the best chance for thunderstorms is over the next several days. The easiest way to put it is that there will be thunderstorms popping up here and there, but we don't have many indications that a well-organized event is setting up for any particular location over the next few days. So what that means is that while many areas will probably stay completely dry, several areas will also see some hefty thunderstorms from time to time. But in general, once you look at the whole Corn Belt together, we end up with widely scattered thunderstorms and not a very heavy rain type of weekend. Now, one thing we're watching for today is that we do have thunderstorms that have been taking place over Lake Michigan, then moving into parts of eastern Illinois, much of western Indiana, and into southwest Michigan. A very unusual setup. We actually think that Lake Michigan is partially helping these thunderstorms to fire, which is unusual. You only see this type of weather scenario in the wintertime, and that's in the form of lake effect snow. But with all the heat moving into Lake Michigan, combining with cool waters, is helping to set the stage for an unusual atmospheric profile that we think is helping these storms to fire. So parts of northwest Indiana in particular will see heavy rain today and into tonight until this setup breaks down.
Tell me more about the heat. Where is it coming from and how hot will it really be?
Well, the hottest day will be today. So we're not looking at a long-lived heat wave, but just to give you an idea of how hot it was off to our west, most of Kansas was anywhere between 105 and 110 degrees yesterday. So intense heat out there. That does not include the humidity level. So that was actual air temperatures. Even Grand Island, Nebraska made it up to 103, and it was 96 in Omaha and Des Moines. Conversely, much of central Illinois and northern Illinois were only in the mid-80s to upper 80s, so a full 20 degrees cooler than it was off to the west. So that's the type of heat that we have that's been taking place off to the west. But as far as what we have going on in our area, we'll see highs into the 90s today for sure, and then occasional 90s over the next 5 to 6 days. And there's not a major pattern change underway even beyond that. So we'll kind of see most of the Corn Belt sandwiched anywhere between highs in the mid-80s to the low 90s. That will be most common over the next 10 days.
Mike, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
You have a great holiday weekend. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. That wraps up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org after about 6 o'clock this evening, and you can listen to Commodity Week.